Good morning, everybody.
Ounces of Information by Central States Beverage Company.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the July edition of Ounces of Information, brought to you by Central States Beverage Company. My name is Aaron Robinson, podcasting from the CS Bev Marketing Studios, as I've been told to affectionately refer to it. It's really kind of like a lounge or a closet. Come by. Anyways, we are all in some form or fashion familiar with the Ozarks, in that it's more than just a Netflix show starring Jason Bateman and crime. So much more. Whether you're down there to get some cashew chicken, go to the lake, stalk Brad Pitt, or visit someone you know at one of the plethora of colleges down there, be it Missouri State or Evangel or Drury, go Panthers. But most importantly, the heart of the Ozarks, Springfield, Missouri, is home to our dear friends, Mother's Brewing Company. Whether you're there for like the evening or you're going down to Branson or something, you always got to stop. It's like Osceola cheese. And in this day and age, when local craft beer is so prevalent, it shouldn't be lost on anyone willing to travel on one tank. Mother's really isn't that far away. But for the last 9 years, to the month actually, Central States has made it easier to get Mother's beer. It's on tap and shelves around the metro. Whether it's a year-round favorite like Little Helper IPA or Three Blind Mice, or an incredible seasonal or limited release like Wintergrind Coffee Stout, Mother's Brewing Company has an attachment to Kansas City, which is why I'm very excited for today to have with me in studio Jeff Schrog, owner and founder of Mother's Brewing Company. We get into everything, what it was like launching in Kansas City to what it's like distributing in Kansas City now to what makes Mother's Mother's. Honestly, I'm just really super stoked to get into this. So without further ado, Jeff Schrog, Mother's Brewing Company. Mother's Brewing Company out of Springfield, Missouri, up here in Kansas City for 9 years?
9 years this month, even.
9 years.
We launched the week after the All-Star Game that was in Kansas City in 2012.
So many people remember.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the All-Star Game literally next week, although, let's see, we're going to probably look to launch this on the 15th. So, but you know how podcasts go. You can just listen at any time. People might be listening to this in August, but
there's no telling.
In all honesty, you should have been listening to it as soon as it came out, because this is a great one. With me today is Mr. Jeff Schrog.
Hello. Hello, podcast audience.
Mr. Mother's Brewing Company himself. Been there from ground one, day one, everything. You saw it from the foundation of the idea in your head.
That's exactly right. Day after Thanksgiving, 2008.
2008.
I was stumbling around looking for a destination career. Loved my life in Springfield. Didn't want to give up my life in Springfield, but knew I could do one more thing. Felt that I was just old enough to do something right, beginning to end, and just young enough to gamble everything I owned one more time.
Now, people don't know this about Jeff Schrog. You actually had another business before this one.
I still have them.
And you're still rolling with them.
Yeah, still rolling with the newspaper, still rolling with the cufflink business, and still do some of that real estate speculation.
This is world-renowned cufflink business.
World-renowned. Largest in the United States. That's right.
That's crazy.
COVID was hard on the cufflink business. Not a lot of weddings,
boy,
proms.
I can imagine.
What wasn't it hard on? Right?
That's very true. Maybe Netflix, but that's
maybe
about
not
it.
Netflix. Yeah. Right.
Netflix seemed to be doing all right with the Tiger King and Michael Jordan's Last Dance and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But we're not all Netflix.
No, none of us are really, except Netflix.
It's right. It's been a process, and we've gotten into that obviously in some other podcasts as well. And I know, I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that are tired of talking about COVID, but at the same time, it's a big part of who we have grown to be as society. And it's something to be said for the breweries that are coming out of this on the other end, too. And there are definitely scars, and there are definitely talking points. And so we're going to get into some of those as well. But
that absolutely sounds great. Kansas City was our first metro market outside of Springfield.
That's right. So that's right.
We've been here quite a while. As a kid from a Kansas farm, you know, we used to take our vacations in Kansas City. We used to come up to see the Royals and go to Worlds of Fun.
There's a connection.
So Kansas City will always, forever be, always and forever be the big city.
Oh, man.
Mothers loves Kansas City. Kansas City loves mothers.
That's right.
And we kind of got into this a little bit earlier in the day, too, talking about the impact of mothers when they first launched in Kansas City. And in the landscape of the craft beer scene in Kansas City, let alone nationwide, definitely doesn't have the makeup that it does now.
Boy, isn't that true. So... You know, we launched in Springfield 2011, looking around where to grow. Certainly, you know, the folks here at Central States had been very vigorous at contacting me, but so had other distributors. And at the time, I looked at St. Louis, and there were probably 20 breweries going in St. Louis.
Oh, wow. Just 20?
Yeah. But there were maybe five in Kansas City. Yeah. Hardly any. You know, yeah. Boulevard cast a giant shadow, I think. And I do feel like Kansas City, in terms of locally owned breweries, was a little bit later to the game than other metros.
No, that would check out.
Due to the enormous market share that, Boulevard has, one of the true pioneers in the craft beer business. So it was a pretty easy choice for me. I love Kansas City, spent a lot of time in Kansas City, and had a good home here at Central States. So
it's very true. And it you know, obviously hit the ground running as well. I we were talking off the podcast just a moment ago. I came in to Central States just very shortly after Mothers did. You'd been here for about a year, half a year before I started in the marketing department. And I came from Springfield, and so I was aware of Mothers. And I remember when Mothers launched in Springfield, it was very quick. I was also 21, 22, so craft beer was also starting to get introduced to me mm-hmm. as well. And I remember my first Mother's beer was Towhead, and it was, you know, fantastic. But then I looked outside, and I remember seeing Mother's neons starting to pop up all around downtown Springfield. Yeah. Like, who does this, really?
Yeah.
Because neons are a big deal. Those aren't cheap.
Those are not cheap. You know? Yeah, I tell you, the thing that always gets me the most is we were doing all these sample brews and trying to you know, scale things up. But when it came time to launch, we didn't have any extra beer. So we told people they had to take three or four handles to get us on day one. And 14 places with no sample beer gave us three or four handles on day one.
Day one.
Just amazing. But, you know, there were places in Kansas City that also gave us, you know, the benefit of the doubt in the beginning.
Sure.
And put us places. I mean, and, you know, you think of little moments here and there. I mean, that first time I drank my beer at Kauffman Stadium. I mean, that's an awesome moment.
It was. They're at the opening of Craft and Draft.
Yeah.
That was oh man, I remember that day.
Yeah, three blind mice.
Don't remember a lot of the rest of that day, mm-hmm. but I remember mm-hmm. the beginning. It was a great time. You launched in Kansas City and with Towhead, with Three Blind Mice and Little Helper, correct?
That's correct. And Sandy was our summer seasonal.
That's right. The hoppy wheat. Delicious stuff. Is that coming back?
Not as Sandy.
Okay.
We have a new beer called Lemon Sandy, which is a lemon lager, which tastes nothing like the original Sandy, but it's my current jam. We sell it in Springfield and at the brewery, and we're kind of letting it spread out a little bit. But it's my current favorite thing we do.
Okay. I have to look for
I'm
that.
I'm slightly obsessed with it.
The good news about Mothers and the good news about Springfield, Missouri, is that it's really not that far of a trip. Like, you know,
it's not.
Especially if you're looking at taking brewery tours, you know, in the central part of Kansas and even like to Columbia. And even if you're considering St. Louis, Springfield is in that radius. Like,
that's exactly
you
right.
Absolutely make it. And the Springfield craft beer scene has grown quite a bit recently, too.
Yeah, there were two when we started, and there's 10 now, and
nuts.
Two slated to open. So
goodness gracious.
So quite a few.
Yeah, starting to explode just a little bit, like
that's
everything
right.
else. But, you know, Mothers, in a lot of ways, paved the way for that to happen in Springfield, paved the way for even a lot of the craft scene in Kansas City.
Yeah, it's like in the Ozarks that people were kind of sitting around waiting for a burrito room for. You know, we didn't know what to expect. I was a little bit worried, you know, here I am in a pretty religious town peddling beer. And I remember the first time I got invited to speak to high school students about entrepreneurism, and they brought in somebody from O'Reilly, somebody from Bass Pro, and me.
Oh, man.
And that was pretty awesome to be a part of that. And as I walked out, some kind of sponsor or whatever said, well, I think this town has come a long way for letting a brewer talk to high school kids. you know, in lots of cultures, lots of states, that's no big deal.
Yeah.
But it sure was a big deal in Southwest Missouri. Before we opened any sort of public event with a beer garden, nobody under 21 could go in. So a baby in a baby carriage wasn't allowed in.
Yeah, yeah.
And we had the first all-ages beer festival in our backyard in May of 2011. And very quickly thereafter, the city began allowing beer at... It started on the square, and then Arts Fest, now in the parks, at the zoo.
That's right.
So I feel really good about the role that we had in saying, look, beer can be a part of family events, and beer can be a part of public events.
Man, when Mother's first launched, that was so far from my mind. I could not have been further from that, Jeff Schrag. Whenever I see Mother's on tap, and I'm 22 years old, I'm like, this more beer.
More
yeah.
beer.
It's
beer.
From just down the street. Oh, I'm definitely going to try that. Toehead was great. Three Blind Mice was fantastic. It was really, really cool. And my timeline might be off just a little bit because I'm going from memory here. But I obviously didn't have the insight and industry perspective that I do now. But I remember the first time I saw Mother's in Walmart.
Yeah.
Was pretty nuts. There was a whole rack of Little Helper.
Yeah, pretty crazy.
It was nuts. And that was quick. That felt really quick.
It was really quick. So we launched in Walmart.
Really?
Yeah, they called us. For one of the store managers, and he said, hey, we're getting so many requests for your beer, we got to start carrying it.
Oh, man.
And we said, well, we're not in package, but we're going to be in package sometime in August. So we launched in May, by draft only, and we did package, you know, right away. The other odd thing we did is we didn't open the tap room first. We sold in the market first. We didn't get the tap room open until the end of June.
Do you think that helped with the 14 placements around day one?
Maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nowhere else to drink it.
Yeah, that's very,
you know,
fair.
Except those 14 placements.
But it's also hard to establish that name right out the gate, too, yeah. without a tasting room, too. And yeah. But it was there. Like,
it was,
I remember.
It was there.
Mother's was...
It was there.
It is. Let's put it that way. Like, we shouldn't be talking about this in past tense.
That's okay. So that manager from Walmart said, well, I'll tell you what. I will expedite your approval through Bentonville. And I'll be doggone if he didn't. And so when we launched, it was the week before Labor Day. We'd hoped to be out, you know, several weeks before. That's cutting it really close. We were in Walmart as soon as we were in Price Cutter and Hy-Vee and Macadoodles and those good places.
Yeah, that is fantastic.
Such pretty cool crazy.
Story. It is. It really is. And then not much longer after that, Kansas City comes rolling around,
yeah.
too.
Yeah. yeah.
That was a big metro launch. Can you walk us through the perspective of launching?
Yeah. I'll tell you a quick funny, and then I'll do yeah. that. So actually, our next market was Cape Girardeau.
Okay. Okay.
So the distributor came over from Cape Girardeau, and they were really looking for a craft beer. It was a little family operation. So in hindsight, I probably should have gone, you know, somewhere else closer sooner. But they did everything they said they were going to do. And years later, when this family sold out, the new distributor was comparing a St. Louis brand to our brand in some of the counties that were just two counties away from St. Louis. And they said, would it shock you to know that you have twice the placements as one of my St. Louis brands, a good St. Louis brand?
Yeah.
I said, yeah, that would really shock me. So this family did me right. And yeah. then we started looking, okay, where should we be? And the first place was Kansas City. So the rollout, they got a bus and all the sales managers, everybody came down. I feel like it was in March of 12. It could have been in April.
Okay.
And we sat and talked about a plan. They tried all the beer. And we decided to go draft only at, there was a festival in May that I cannot think of the name of. And then we were on tap after that.
Okay.
And then to launch package in July.
Okay. Okay. So then once we get past July and we're past the launch week, which is a big deal, whenever mm-hmm. we get everything rolled out, every store that's ordering it is getting it. What has the reception for Mother's been, 2012 to 2015, 2016, kind of leading up to the pandemic a little bit?
Sure. So the nice thing was in those early years, craft just grew. And you put it on the shelf and it sold. You know, it was a really, really interesting thing. The thing that hurt the most in craft was about 2015. There got to be too much craft in the market. And there's a couple of theories. One theory is alcoholic root beer. It was a short fad, if you remember.
I do.
9-10% alcoholic root beer, full of sugar, mm-hmm. came out that summer. And it was, for many distributors, their number one SKU for about 2 or 3 months.
Yeah.
And so people stopped buying craft. And there's also a comment from one of the national breweries that craft reached a constipation point in the summer of 2015. There was just too much craft beer in the system to go through. And suddenly distributors had too much seasonal. And seasonal is what they begin to eye on. And seasonal, at least for my mind, was the basis of craft.
Yeah.
Is that you give me a space or a tap handle, and I'll give you some variety. And I'll figure it out, and I'll make sure it costs the same. And I'll make sure it has a theme or doesn't have a theme or some way to communicate to the consumer. Mm-hmm. And that's become a really tough thing to do in craft. That's the number one pushback you get from places. Oh, we got too many seasonals. They run long. Mm-hmm. We don't have enough. So that's tough. It wasn't that way back in the beginning. So that's been the first tough thing. And then when I started, there were 1,500 breweries when I had the idea. I contend we were 1,751. That's my own math. And now there are over 9,000 breweries.
Nuts.
It's nuts. Yeah. So the nice thing about all these little bitty players in craft that just sell on their own premise is they've added a lot of energy to the category. I can still remember the days when you had to go in. There were some places you went into and asked for craft beer, and they said, what? So you mean draft beer? And, you know, you don't have to do that anymore. Everybody knows what craft beer is. And Rare is the place that does not have any craft beer at all.
Yeah.
So that's great. And there's all this awareness of locally produced things or artisanal produced things. But the other thing is so much of people's experience is going out to breweries, which is a great thing. It's a fun thing. I like to do that. But that has certainly changed the marketplace.
Yeah.
It's changed the neighborhood bar. It's changed the liquor store. And that change occurred between 15 and COVID. Now, COVID was a fascinating thing. I thought a lot more craft breweries would go out of business, but they didn't. Mm-hmm. And I've got a couple of theories as to why they didn't. But there's still so many craft breweries around, again, which is great for the industry. I feel like it was not as hard on craft breweries as it was on restaurants. Just my own personal opinion.
Pretty fair point. I think there's some numbers to back that up.
And that changed also, again, some of the ways that consumers interface with craft, and that's always the challenge, right? Nothing stays the same. You've got to always change
sure. How
you interface directly with your customers. But for us, as a small craft brewery, what we lost on premise with our bar and restaurant partners was greater than we made up for in the grocery and liquor and convenience. Now, big brewers was the opposite. But big brewers, of course, don't get much of their volume from bars and restaurants.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I hit the changes you're wanting to talk about, but it's constantly changing. There's lots more competition, but there's also opportunity because the consumer's far more educated.
Yeah, no, that's actually incredible insight. And there's a couple things I kind of want to go back and touch base on there a little bit. You mentioned there at the very beginning that seasonals were kind of a big play with bars and restaurants and even liquor stores and anywhere who's looking to have a shelf space added next to your flagship products. And you will know this better than anybody else, but when it comes to seasonals and just even one-offs and limited releases and just beers that you're not brewing on a consistent basis and already have a consistent price point for, there's ingredients that go into that that aren't always the norm. Like, it's not always just water, hops, barley, and yeast, especially in American craft. American craft is still a lot of ways the Wild West, where you're not going by Reinheitsgebot laws. You're throwing in lactose. You're throwing in, you're barrel aging it. You're putting lobster in it. You're doing whatever, you know? That's what makes craft cool. That's what makes craft craft. But you also kind of have to factor in the price point of those ingredients. And so what, from the brewery perspective, is it like balancing, you know, what price point you need to place these beers at with all of these crazy ingredients to a market that more often than not purchases based on things like ABV?
Boy, that's a really good point. Yeah, it's a huge dance. So there's kind of a no man's land. There's stuff that you're selling directly across your counter. And that buyer is more experimental than the average consumer, and they're in an experimental space for them, which is a brewery. Oh, I'm going to the brewery. Oh, I might try something different because I'm here. So one of the bigger mistakes we make as a brewery is trying to extrapolate that knowledge out into the market and say, wow, this beer sold great at the brewery. Let's bring it out in production batches. And then it doesn't sell in production batches. That's a real, real heartache.
Yeah.
Now, when you're doing that, though, you don't have to be as conscious of the price of the liquid, because that $5 to $7 pint is very forgiving about ingredient costs.
Sure.
Now, a $9 to $10 six-pack, where the most expensive component in there is the packaging, that, you know, making that $14, $15, that's hard, much harder to do. Kegs are more forgiving, again, the same model, but it's hard, especially if you're doing anything where you're producing some artwork and making, you know, a package. So breweries my size, and I think a little bit bigger, but certainly smaller, we fit in this no man's land where we're not just selling beer across our counter, but we're not like a large national brewery that, okay, you're only going to sell 100 kegs in a market like Kansas City, but you're in enough Kansas cities that you can do a batch. And it's no big deal because there is that buyer that wants that special stuff and will pay more for it.
Sure, sure.
There's also the gift buyer that they're oh, I know they like beer. Oh, this is really interesting. It's got apricots in it and it's sour. Maybe they'll like it. I'll get it. But those aren't usually enough to sustain you in a small operation like I have.
Sure.
So spending time figuring that out, I mean, I don't want to say it's all we do, but we spend so much time saying, what can we afford to put in this beer to hit this price point that we believe it will sell through on so that nobody's stuck with any of it?
Yeah.
And can we get the taste we want? And we've had to say no. There's just some we cannot do. We can't get it tasting like we want, and so you don't want to taste like a cough drop. That's the Luden's effect is something I always fear, and that's a clearly artificial fruit or flavoring that you do get in a number of products. And it's sure. Like, oh my God, this tastes like an artificial whatever, a cherry or berry or anything like that.
Yeah. There's so many things we could talk about. My goal, honestly, Jeff, is to keep this under 3 hours.
Oh, good. That's what John Cain said to me.
And here we are.
And here we are.
There's so many directions we can honestly go with this. But since you brought this one up, and it does hit on quite perfectly what I kind of wanted to seg into, the world of seltzer and hard seltzers in particular, and how it went from phase to hardcore phase, like, phase of like brewed IPA to hardcore phase, like hazy IPAs, to where it's clearly not going anywhere, to now it's actually an established big major player. And in places like Mother's are getting into the game with Ready Hard Seltzer. Here in Kansas City, we have the Cherry Limeade Ready Hard Seltzer. But with a lot of seltzers, you kind of notice this artificial taste because for the ingredients, you have to get it down to, you know, the right amount of calories and the right amount of ABV. It's got to be around 5. It's got to be around 100, respectfully. That always comes at the sacrifice of something. And there are times, you know, the artificial sweetener can be very prevalent in some. Mother's Ready has a huge, big selling point in that it's real fruit juice, correct?
That is exactly right. So the sad story of Ready is, you'll remember this, we had to recall our first batch of Ready. What we found was a matchstick-like quality, a sulfur quality, that was not present at packaging but developed in the package. In a pretty short amount of time, thank God.
Okay.
So not a ton of it had gotten out into the market, but it was one of the more embarrassing things in my career, and it was right when COVID started.
Oh, man. So quality issues, not what you want to talk about.
Yeah, not what you want to talk about. Yeah. So then we went back and reformulated everything, and at that time, we were only using artificial flavors. Well, then as we began drinking all kinds of other seltzers, and I want to give a nod where it's due, Quirk was the first one that I drank that utilized some fruit juice.
Sure, yeah.
And I felt like it tasted better by a magnitude, if not two magnitudes.
Yeah, yeah.
And that began taking us down the path of, can we use real fruit juice? Now, what we've learned, and seltzer has helped us in flavoring beers as well, is that one thing won't get you what you want. Different types of flavoring come with different attributes. And so using some combination of concentrates and extracts and juices and flavorings ultimately will get you what you want. And that's been a good lesson for us. There's nowhere to hide in seltzer because you've got this flavorless, odorless liquid, and then it's however you flavor it, and completely unforgiving.
Yeah,
if you do something wrong. So really worrying about your pH level, really watching the citric acid in there, depending on what type of style you're doing. Those were all things we learned. And so I'm now, in hindsight, grateful for the recall.
No,
because our direction was, let's do just what the big boys are doing.
Yeah.
And now our direction is, oh, we have a point of differentiation here. We use real fruit juice. And we feel like you can taste it. The flavor comes through.
For me, it definitely shows. That real fruit juice is honestly what makes all the difference. And it's what makes a seltzer incredibly drinkable for me. Because I can't, my personal palate, I can't get past the artificial flavor a lot of times. It creates that aftertaste, you know.
And me too.
And it's good, don't get me wrong, but ready hard seltzer is different in the angle that it is just a delicious drinking seltzer that you can have multiple of without any of that aftertaste. It's kind of why people get into seltzer to begin with.
Yeah.
So,
thank you.
Yeah. Well, obviously, sir, you're welcome. But you know, thank you. And you know, you touched on it that the quality control issue was an embarrassing moment, and obviously, it's not something any brewery should ever want to deal with. But you know, if I can make light of something really quick, I've heard very, very recently that sulfur ingested in your system can actually ward off mosquitoes.
I did not know that. So come drink our seltzer, and you won't get mosquito bites.
That's right.
I don't know.
I wasn't going to, you know, promote that by any stretch of the means, but I'd heard from a guy. He's like, yeah, I went to Vietnam, and I have a match head every once a month. Never got bit. I'm like, okay.
Well, there you go.
There must be something to that. So
just to be clear here, we are not professionals in the medical industry, and we are in no way suggesting anyone treat this conversation as a fact when it comes to mosquito remedies. Please do your most thorough of research and or consult your physician for more accurate remedies. And also, please know, while we're joking here, yes, Mother's Brewing Company does take their quality control incredibly serious, and they are awesome at their job. Anyway, back to it.
It could be a total urban legend. Please don't do that. In all actuality, this is a this is not science backed. I don't think. But this is a beer podcast. Please just stick to beer and
leave
seltzer.
That to professionals. Yeah. Go about your business.
Should be saying. So we touched on Ready Hard Seltzer, and that's readily available in Kansas City market.
Yeah, ready to buy.
We're
right
ready.
Down
we're ready.
At the store.
Got to get more ready. But you know, let's talk into a little bit more of the Mother's portfolio. There is the familiar that you can readily find in Kansas City as well, such as Three Blind Mice, a fantastic brown ale. That if you've not had, I honestly, you need to go try it immediately. It's very, very good. It's a good intro into the craft beer scene as well.
Completely agree. It's also our best food pairing beer.
Yeah.
Crazy versatile, from sweets to any type of baked good to grilled meats to vegetables, pasta. It's a nice treat to have with dinner. I'm a huge believer that beer is the equal of wine on the table. And beer is great for food pairing. So,
amen, brother.
Yeah, Three Blind Mice a lot. When we first stumbled upon the actual basic recipe that we've tweaked over the years, I dreamed about it.
Yeah?
And I thought, well, okay, we've got something there if I'm dreaming about it, of Three Blind Mice.
This was sent in a vision, Kansas City.
It was
City.
Sent in a vision, yeah, that's right.
This is a beer that was sent in a vision. This means you need to go get some. That's the bottom
exactly
line. There's your vision. We've also got Little Helper IPA, which is a mainstay in just about any IPA lover's fridge. Are we still labeling it as a Midwest Coast IPA?
Exactly.
Love
Midwest
it.
Midwest Coast.
Love it.
A little bit friendlier than an East Coast or a West Coast.
Very true. Not as intimidating on either side
That's
of
exactly
the spectrum.
That's exactly right.
And it literally is.
Yeah.
It's just right there in the middle. Yeah. Oh, it's great drinking. Actually, that kind of segues into the other portion that I wanted to talk about, transitioning from a bottling line primarily to a canning line.
Yeah, so our canning line is not of the size that we could abandon the bottle. And so we still sell more bottles of Little Helper than cans of Little Helper as a brewery, because that's what people started with. You know, craft has been transitioning into can. Craft breweries embraced cans. You also have areas where glass is frowned upon, like pools and lakes and golf courses, and so craft has moved to now, I think it's maybe more than 50% can and less than 50% bottle, something
that
like
sounds
that.
Sounds about right.
We will probably continue to do a dual format just because we'd have to get a new bottle or a new canning line, excuse me.
Sure.
But we also felt the need a couple years ago, we've got to have a year-round can, at least one year-round can. So now we have several. and that's been good for our brand, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. And you're right. The versatility of a can kind of speaks for itself. It's a lake beer now. It's mm-hmm. it's a golf course beer now. It's anywhere you want to be, you know?
That's right.
Bottles, not so much. They get a little violent and breaky, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Bottles.
Violent.
Violent bottles.
You heard it here first.
Yeah. Draft beer. We've got Sunshine Chugsuckle still killing it in Kansas City. Mm-hmm. Love to see that on draft anywhere. It's a great tasting New England IPA. It was actually a very good introductory New England IPA to a lot of people at the time that couldn't get the rare release of Trillium and Treehouse and the ones up there in New England doing the New England IPAs and revolutionizing the style. Mother's filled that local void to say this is the style locally.
Yeah, in fact, we put it in a package really early on in Kansas City. The distributor did an aggressive thing and got us into the market very quickly from maybe a 45-day turnaround from, hey, if we can get you this beer, can you get it in the market? And that's worked out really well for us, being somewhat of a first mover in the Midwest in distributing that style, New England IPAs. That's a beer that we sell a lot more draft than we do package yeah. of. Of course, I'm a draft guy. If ever I can get beer on draft, I do.
Oh, same.
So I understand that certainly. And we're really happy to continue with that beer. I also feel like that is a style that is here to stay, the New England IPA.
I agree.
And I've drank them all over the country and thoroughly enjoyed it. In fact, even 2 years ago was at Trillium.
Yeah.
In July 2 years ago and drank some at their bar.
How was that experience? Was it fun?
It was a hoot.
Nice.
It was a hoot. I was there for a training seminar on software.
Oh, wow.
And I walked out of the seminar, walked immediately to my Uber, and then raced directly to the bar.
Yeah.
Because it filled up.
Of course. Of
course. Downtown Boston.
Yeah.
You know, an area I don't know anything about. So, anyway.
Anyway, yeah.
I worshipped at the veritable altar of New England IPAs there at Trillium.
But if you're looking for a good take on the style, Sunshine Chugsuckle on tap around Kansas City is the way to do it. It's delicious stuff.
I agree with you.
I'm glad. Very good. We've also got the seasonals coming out here very, very soon. Are we seeing the return of Oktoberfest?
Yeah, the return of Oktoberfest yes. will be out in August.
Oh, so good.
Mr. Pumpkin ride along with it.
Fantastic.
Our pumpkin sales continue to grow. I am probably the only fan of Mr. Pumpkin at the brewery.
Ooh.
We are not a group of pumpkin drinkers, but
I need to spend more time there.
Dearly
then.
Love that beer,
yeah.
And we continue to keep it, and we've seen very nice growth of that beer the last 3 years.
Thank you for your efforts.
I think there was, going back to the constipation point, yeah. too many pumpkin beers in the market. Everyone did one.
Very fair.
And I think people will drink X amount of pumpkin beer.
Very fair.
Just because, again, it comes out once a year. Oh my goodness, it's the fall. Have a pumpkin beer, and if there's too many brands chasing too few drinkers, the result is bad. But I think now that has calmed down, and because we've stuck with our pumpkin, because we have a beery pumpkin, not a sweet pumpkin,
yeah,
but a very easy drinking beery pumpkin. You know you're drinking a beer.
Mm-hmm.
I feel really good about that. But we were talking about Oktoberfest, and yes, our very drinkable, not too sweet Oktoberfest will be out again for the fall, and then right behind that is our mammoth seasonal winter grind.
Yes, yes. I was saving Winter Grind, but I'm very happy to get right into that.
Whatever you want to do, my friend.
No, all good. The only thing I was going to say about the Oktoberfest and the pumpkin beers is that, you know, you say you're the big proponent for Mr. Pumpkin sticking around at the brewery. I can help with that and market as best I can, buying as many cases of Mr. Pumpkin
Thank
as possible.
Thank you, sir.
Pumpkin beers are just a staple in the craft beer
like
market.
You have to go buy a packaged beer in the market. I mean, who you? Okay, okay.
Of course I'm going to go do that. I'm going to go across the street and see our friends or down the road and see our friends.
Okay, good for you.
And I'll tell you what, if I see it on tap, I'm going to be able to get something there too.
Wow.
You know, yeah, this is what we do.
Seeing a handsome man like you drink my beer is going to do nothing but improve the image of my brand.
Oh, goodness, Jeff. Goodness, you flatter me. real quick, because pumpkin beers and Oktoberfest beers, more so than just about any other seasonal, seems to trigger the craft fan with the term seasonal creep.
Yep.
I guess you just can't wrap your mind around the fact that it's actually one of the shortest seasonals that
is
released. More so than winter seasonals, more so than spring and summer seasonals. It's got the shortest lifespan. But because it says Oktoberfest, mm-hmm. people think it has to be October. Or because pumpkin is connotated with Thanksgiving and Halloween, we can't enjoy these things in August. Do you really believe in seasonal creep, sir?
Yes.
Boo.
Here's what I think. I believe it's an issue for the consumer.
Okay.
But I also know that for me, if I don't hit all my distributors' warehouses with my fall seasonal in July, so they have it ready to go when they build those displays, I miss out.
Very true.
So, you know, it's interesting. Those beers aren't going anywhere. We're selling more of those beers. So I think it's one of those things people like to complain about something, you know, the weather, whatever.
I don't know if you've been on the internet recently, Mr.
Yeah,
Shrog.
That's it. I think that internet thing might be around to stay. Yeah. I don't know. I've been thinking about getting on it. So it doesn't drive me crazy people not wanting to drink those beers in July. It does drive me crazy to think they can't drink them in November.
That's very fair. And yeah, I guess to a point
where if the date's on there, mm-hmm. and it's a brewery with integrity that puts the dates on their packages, which we do on all of our packages, and so you know when you should or
yes.
should drink it for sure. If you drink it after that, you never know. It's like the milk. It might last fine beyond its expiration date. But you're taking your palate into your own hands when you open a beer past its enjoy by date. But November, there's nothing magical about November 1st.
True.
But you watch those beers.
You know, that's a really good point to make. If ever there was an argument for seasonal creep, you made one for the opposite side of it. And I respect that. Was not prepared for it. So I have no retort, sir.
The only funny thing about seasonal creep is that, you know, you have seen some of the big breweries launch their spring seasonal in January.
Yes.
They seem to not want to cross the line and launch the spring seasonal in December. That True. Seems to be the only hard line in all of seasonal beers is no launching a spring seasonal in December.
I don't know, Jeff. I really feel like we're 3 weeks away from getting summer shandy year-round at this point. You know? Not that that's a bad thing. I would absolutely take it. But anyway, moving forward, you brought up Wintergrind, and I got to talk about Wintergrind because this is the one. This is fantastic, fantastic coffee stout. And it was the first seasonal I remember Mother's seeing them from Mother's on tap handles. I was at Patton Alley Pub, R.I.P.
R.I.P.
Yep. Whenever I had my first one, I don't know why I picked it up. I think it was just because it had winter in the name, and I was big into winter warmers. But I also didn't hate coffee, and I specifically loved being from Springfield, a Mudhouse coffee. And so I was very pleasantly surprised whenever the bartender told me what it was after she poured it and took it and was beyond blown away at the flavors, the aroma, the taste. Everything about this beer drew me into everything that I had known from stouts prior and just totally revolutionized it for me. And coffee. I didn't know coffee could be in beer.
Yeah, it all comes together, doesn't it?
It's delicious.
Yeah, we work really hard on that beer. We grind our own beans. And we get everything ready. We grind them and put them immediately into the tank. We have a system that we did a few years ago where we make sure that we really get the flakes of coffee, the grounds of coffee, if you will, really soak through the liquid so every last little bit of coffee flavor and aroma is saturated into the liquid. We work really hard at it, and it's just a wonder to drink it every year.
It is, and it's one that I think a lot of people, specifically in Kansas City as well, that circle it on the calendar for around that release time because craft scenes kind of come and go. Beers can come and go, and you can fall in and out of love with certain styles and certain beers, but everybody I know that drinks Mother's, has drank Mother's, will always say, but that Wintergrind hits different. It's just it's fantastic beer.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say that. Yeah, the last week in October every year, we bring that beer out. And, yeah, thank you for the kind words. It is an absolute labor of love to put that beer out every year.
Sir, I am merely echoing the city that we distribute to. It is very well received here in Kansas City. And as speaking of things that were very well received in Kansas City, let's talk about another stout that you guys did, one that took home some very specific, very hard-earned, and well-deserved hardware. The Von Schrog beer.
The Von Schrog beer.
Now, where did that name come from?
Well, my middle name is Von, and my last name is Schrog, and we had this crazy idea to do two different stouts at the same time. Do an industry stout, and then the Von Schrog, and the industry stout would just be the stout, and the Von Schrog would be like a German chocolate cake. And so we add coconut, and we add chocolate from our friends at Askenosi Chocolate in Springfield, and voila, we have this really beautiful chocolate beer. The coconut is what does it. The coconut balances everything out. It balances the sweetness of the malt with the roastiness from the grain, with the character of the chocolate, but that brings everything together is that right amount of coconut.
You know, it shouldn't be under said there, like how impactful that coconut is in that beer. Because coconut, you know, brewing, coconut's a very hard thing to harness. You know, it can either be too much or too less. And it's also just a very intimidating flavor for a lot of people.
It's
anyway.
Very divisive. You're exactly right.
Yeah, it's like pineapple on pizza. You know, like you got your opinions and they're always very strong about them. But this beer is probably the closest I've ever seen to any brewer that's actually harnessed it for its intent and really used it for good.
For good as opposed to evil, yeah. Oh, I agree with you. And, you know, our brewers work really hard at these different flavor compounds. So we still run a Firkin program on the first Friday of every month at the brewery where folks just get to play around with flavors. And that's also been very instructive. I think that's a word.
It is now.
It is now. Very educational for us to learn about how flavors go together, what's too much, what's too little. And so coconut is a favorite ingredient of different Firkins, and learning how to work with coconut is no small feat. So thank you for recognizing that.
Oh, absolutely. One. Absolutely. Again, least I can do. Thank you for making it.
I also like to always do the least I can do, so I appreciate that.
Oh, again, no retort. I got nothing on this one, sir. But yes, and we mentioned the hardware. It did take the bronze, correct?
That's right. Bronze at the latest Great American Beer Festival.
That's right.
We're going to resubmit it this year and just see what happens.
Nice, nice.
Open for a twofer.
Even if it doesn't happen, it is in my heart. It's so good.
There you go.
Are we going to see more of it?
Yes, you'll see some more. The last iteration came out in February.
Yes.
Of this year. And so probably won't see any more this year.
Fine.
Absolutely. You will see more.
I'm excited for that. And I know I'm not alone. That is a very well-received beer. Very much one to look forward to. And just Mother's Brewing in general. I think a lot of people are familiar with the concept of Springfield, Missouri. There's a lot of lakes down there, Table Rock, Branson. So they know how to get there. Mother's is kind of the downtown Springfield and just the Springfield area in general staple. It's kind of a tourist destination at this point.
Yeah, it is. It's really interesting. Friday afternoons, almost everybody in our tap room is from out of town.
Really?
Yeah. That's looking for something to do, coming out to a brewery tap room. It's very interesting.
That is.
You see it from the license plates and people that, oh, I've never been here before. I'm from da-da-da.
Yeah.
Very interesting thing.
Well, and we touched base a little bit earlier about how, you know, the craft scene in Springfield has grown to what it is. And every time, you know, even in this industry, it's always like, well, hey, I'm going to so-and-so. What should I check out? What should I check out? And there's always three or four just about anywhere. Springfield, no exception. But the one everyone always mentions without any fail is Mother's. And it shows. It shows.
Thank you.
The tap room is a very unique, very cool place. The festivals that you guys put on, which have had some issues in the past with the weather always cooperating.
Yeah, outdoor festivals are a tough thing.
But, you know, it's always something to go and make a trip out of, regardless. It's always, you know, the whole thing up here is one tank trips. Easy.
Yeah.
It's a one-tank trip.
It's a one-tank trip.
You should absolutely do so. And you're always cranking out new styles. And I know this because I've tried in the past to pitch a few styles to you, a few different beers, and I've never seen them on the shelves yet. So I wanted to follow up.
Do you want to follow up? Okay.
I was going to repitch a few things to you here, Jeff. I was hoping that, you know, in the R&D of Mother's Brewing Company, that there's some room in the tanks for some ideas.
It was just one tank, but go ahead.
Okay, I'm ready. Whenever. Just, you know, throughout the course of the year, whenever you guys aren't doing Winter Grind or Von Schrag, just throw this one in between.
Okay.
You got a couple weeks on the schedule.
What do you have there, Aaron?
The first one is a very simple, very, very easy drinking porter called Bass Porter.
Bass Porter.
Yeah. Yeah.
Huh. What a great idea.
I feel like the folks down the street wouldn't be too upset. They might be a little flattered.
Yeah.
You know, no lawsuits
great
or anything
idea.
Like that.
No lawsuits.
And the label design can be very similar, but
it could be,
you know, yeah. Mr. Morris would be stoked on it.
I think that's a great idea.
I appreciate that. There's another one. And at the time whenever I first thought about this, the hazies were kind of starting to come into the play a little bit, and they were making a splash in the IPA scene, and now it's very well established splash in the IPA scene. About a James River unfiltered IPA.
Well, there you go.
So you're not just leaving the IPA unfiltered, but you're actually brewing with unfiltered water from the James
River.
From
the James River.
I don't recommend it, but it would be a selling point.
It would be a selling point to some people, I'm sure. I'm sure.
It might be the last beer they ever buy, but it'll be a good one. I got another one for you.
There's more.
Yes, and actually, this is kind of a mixed six pack, all based on Brad Pitt, I know you guys have your partnership with Doug Pitt.
That's right.
And doing good orange wheat ale. Fantastic drinking. And we still have some on the shelves here in Kansas City. Nice little plug. Proceeds from the sale in Kansas City of Doing Good will benefit the Negro Leagues Museum.
Yep.
Go out and get some Doing Good. This was brewed in collaboration with Doug Pitt. Like, tell me the story behind that just a little bit.
So Doug Pitt sold his IT business back in the day and was kind of looking around for stuff to do. And he began a charity called Care to Learn. And Care to Learn helps kids buy something like a pair of eyeglasses or a backpack, or schools will have these closets that have clothes in them. If something happens to a kid at school or doesn't have everything, they can go and outfit them. So it's small little bitty things, school supplies. They're just the kid doesn't have access to, that make it where the kid can actually learn. And that's a charity that he started from nothing.
Yeah.
And threw his energy into. And so he is a good craft beer drinker. And so for his 50th birthday, the staff at Care to Learn called me and said, hey, we're racking our brain for something to give Doug. Could he come and brew a beer at Mother's? So that was his 50th birthday present from staff at Care to Learn, was to come and brew that beer. And this is the result of it, is this orange wheat.
Huh.
And so we decided to do a cause momentum beer. And so portions of every case sold go to a local charity in Springfield. It's Care to Learn. And all of our distributor partners get to choose a local charity. In this case, the Negro Baseball Museum.
Yes.
And it's different in every community. And so it's a nice little way to give back to the communities where we sell our beer.
That was very cool. I did not know that story, actually.
So he came and brewed the first batch.
Awesome. The only thing that I knew, aside from just the fact that it's a delicious drinking beer, is the video that you guys released in collaboration.
We did a spoof on Seven, where he plays his brother.
Yes.
In Seven. And it's instead of a gory head, it is, in fact, a stolen case of beer.
It's a just fantastic video.
But it's a really good video.
I'll have to link it in the blog post here whenever we launch this podcast.
If you're going to link a video, you ought to link Laverne and Shirley.
I'm going to do that one, too. You're absolutely right. Okay. We got to bring that one up, too. Whenever Mothers first started, we did, and I'm going to butcher it here, but Schlemiel Schlemazel.
Yeah.
I don't know the rest.
Schlemiel Schlemazel Hassenpfeffer Incorporated.
That's it.
As the beginning of Laverne. So we did the intro to Laverne and Shirley. Here's what was interesting. We started researching it. We couldn't find, there's only one other major parody of it that Wayne and Garth did.
Oh.
But they stop in the middle of it.
Okay.
And like go on to something else. So we did. We actually had a professional guy come and film it, and people in the brewery played different roles, and we were very careful to outfit them in similar outfits.
Of course.
And it's a really, really good parody the opening to Laverne and Shirley.
Good call out, Jeff. I need to link that one, too. So Mother's video game, honestly, is almost as on point as Mother's brewing game. So you definitely need to check them out. The YouTube channel, the brewery, everything. All about it. Oh, yeah. My beers.
Your beers. I forgot. You got a Brad Pitt six-pack.
You would be kidding. You're over there trying to say, no. This guy, just get this over with. I've got an idea for a Brad Pitt R&D six pack, and I don't know if you want to do one of six or two of each, like three different kinds. But I got three kinds.
Wow,
they're all based on Brad Pitt movies. Okay,
mm-hmm.
The first one, Light Club.
Light Club would be a light beer.
Yeah, yeah,
huh?
You picking up what I'm throwing down right
great
now?
Great idea.
Light Club.
Yeah,
I've got another one, and spoofing off of the movie the David Fincher.
David Fincher, yes. Of course.
Going off of the David Fincher classic Seven, Seven Hops.
Seven Hops.
Yes, kind of like the seven sins that were prevalent in that movie. And then the final one I got is Once Upon a Time in a Bourbon Barrel.
Huh? I mean, what great ideas here.
I just throwing it out there.
So a friend of mine really thinks we should do scratch and sniff labels, and you could smell what the beer's like before you open it.
Oh, man.
But your ideas are much better than his.
I don't know. That one's up there. That one's up there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But yeah, I'll take that. I got one more.
Oh, there's more.
This is it. This is the last one I got. And I don't know the schematics behind making it happen. Seems like it should, though, especially being Mother's from Springfield. A cashew chicken goza.
That just sounds great.
Does it?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not the only one.
Yeah. You might be the only one.
Okay, that's fair. Maybe think that one through. Throw that through the R&D, maybe just a tasting room sort of thing. But
yeah, we'll see what happens.
Yeah. Just if you need my notes, I'm happy to lend them to you after the podcast.
Yeah.
Can't wait. Well,
I'm sure I got your card here somewhere.
You're so excited to throw those away, aren't you? in all seriousness, unless you've got something else that you would like to bring up, I do a segment here at the end of each podcast called The Five Heavy Hitters.
Mm-hmm.
Butter up!
Five Heavy Hitters.
I'm ready.
All right. Question number one. What is the funniest way you've ever broken the law?
Funniest? Oh, my God. I'm kind of speechless here.
Bonus points if it's a felony.
Yeah, I guess any time driving in a convertible completely naked would be. I guess not against the law, though, is it?
What? You've done this?
Yeah, well, you said it's the funniest thing. I mean, I don't look very good, so my body's pretty funny. I feel like that was it.
How many times have you done this?
Maybe once.
Okay.
Maybe twice.
Okay. No, that qualifies.
Does it qualify?
That's the answer. Unless you got another cool story.
No, not really.
Being naked somewhere else.
Not really.
Okay. Being in a convertible naked. All right. Forgive me.
A lot of breezes.
It was not. You can imagine. I was not prepared. Was it in the city or was it a highway?
I can't divulge that stuff. Yeah. Statute of limitations isn't over yet.
Oh, God dang. I wasn't prepared. I didn't know what to expect. Got better. Okay, question number two. In all of your years of loving music and the art of performance, not counting naked convertible riding, what performer would you, Jeff Schrag, personally bring to Branson for a permanent residence?
Oh, Meatloaf, without any question. Meatloaf.
He would actually kind of fit there, too.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense.
I think it would do good. I think Wayne Newton would be sad he missed out on it.
Yeah.
And I think Meatloaf would bring a lot of people in.
No, that's a good point. I would definitely even pay more visits than I already do.
See?
Man, see? Branson, Missouri. Mm-hmm. Meatloaf and Silver Dollar City.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Great. Great.
Yeah.
Question number three. What is the second best thing about Springfield?
Second best thing.
Without upsetting a lot of people.
About Springfield, I'm going to say it is that we have a really vibrant outdoor culture. Lots of trails, lots of places to walk, and we're not so big where you're away from nature.
Good point.
Second best thing.
Good point. Very good point. Question number four. Grilled cheese or peanut butter and jelly?
Grilled cheese.
Easy.
I'm a savory guy, yeah.
Okay. Melty.
Yeah, cheese, melty.
You cheese, can do a lot with it.
Protein, a ton with it.
PB&J, you're kind of just in a box.
Yeah, P,
you know?
B, and J.
J, that's it. Bread, maybe.
Yeah.
Anyway, question number five. Big karaoke guy?
No.
Wasn't really my question, but it was part of it.
No, you're done.
What was but you've done karaoke in your life, yeah?
I have.
What was the last song you karaoke'd to?
Well, I only have the one song I like to karaoke to, and that is Friends in Low Places by Garth Brooks.
Classic.
It's a classic.
Yeah. Do it quite often?
No, but that's what I do when I do. Okay. That's the voodoo that I do when I do the karaoke.
What does it take to get Jeff Schrag up there on the karaoke?
You know, five beers.
Five, okay.
5 to 7.
What does it take to get Jeff Schrag naked convertible ink?
No. You know, well, a good companion.
Okay.
That's fair. Really help. Or more beers than that, yeah.
Okay.
Do you have a convertible?
I don't.
That's one obstacle.
Missed opportunity on that one. Oh, Jeff Schrag, it has been an absolute pleasure.
I agree.
Did we touch on everything? Is there anything I missed?
We did. Oh, I mean, what an honor it is with me to sit here with one of the best men in Kansas City.
Oh.
Who formerly was the most eligible bachelor in Kansas City until Diamond shut that right down.
She listens. She will very much appreciate that. Uh-huh. We definitely need to make a point to get down to Springfield soon. If you've not been down to Springfield, anybody listening, I definitely recommend Mother's Brewing Company as a actual anchor for the stop. Along the way, you know, get a to-go pack or get some beer at the tap room, enjoy yourself, come back, and look for it on shelves up here in Kansas City as well.
Wonderful. Thanks, Aaron. All Thanks, right. Kansas City.
Ounces of Information by Central States Beverage Company.
for me, this is an easy conversation to have. I don't need to do too much prep for a conversation with mothers.
Wonderful.
And it's great that the brewery's logo is shaped like a heart, my heart. Not just mother's heart, but yeah. Anyway.
But also like your heart.
Also like my heart.
Little known secret that Aaron was the model for the heart.
That's flattering, sir. Mm-hmm. Flattering. Mm-hmm. I'll take mm-hmm. that.